Grade 2 Conference, Lecture 31. We're going to talk about who were the saints. Rudolf Steiner spoke now and then about what he called spiritual economy, a phrase that you may have heard cited or quoted here or there, but usually it's just kind of put out there. Like, of course, we all know what that means. But I'm going to explain what he meant by that today, at least a big part of what he meant by that. And it will give us some insight into those beings known as the saints. And this is what Steiner has to say, that the spiritual world works in a very economical way. Waste not, want not. It's not just Ben Franklin's phrase, but something that, in a way, he brought down from the way in which the world of the hierarchies functions and works. So it took many generations. We might say it took the whole of the first half of Earth evolution for the perfect human physical body of Jesus of Nazareth to be created, in addition to his perfect etheric body, perfect astral body, that here was a being whose higher members were all imbued with the perfection of the ideal of those members that is embedded in the spiritual world, his ego as well, of course, the Christ ego. So what happened when he was crucified and when he died in such an agonizing way, in which the suffering that he experienced in a certain way completely shattered his physical body and, of course, deeply affected the life forces and the soul forces connected with that, and in which his ego had to completely take part so that a spiritual being could experience what it was like to be in a human body. What happened to all of those members? Well, the physical body, we can say, became part and parcel of the earth and is, even now as we speak, acting redemptively and transformatively, though one wouldn't always know it, on the earth in its deepest and most profound nature. The etheric body, the astral body, and the ego returned to their respective places in the spiritual world, the etheric world, the astral world, and the realm of the ego. But because they were so perfect, and because they had participated for a relatively short period of time in being connected with an earthly physical body, this etheric body, this astral body, this ego were very, very special. Nothing like this had ever been seen before, created before, experienced before in the spiritual world. So Steiner tells us, we're not just going to waste these and let them kind of go out to pasture in the spiritual world. Rather, spiritual beings made copies, replicas, using the terminology of modern biology and biological engineering. We could say they were cloned. These higher members were cloned. And they were kept then safely stored in the spiritual world for future use. But we're not talking about the far, far distant future here. Actually, these bodies, by and large, have already been put to use. And this is how it worked out, that the shockwaves of the crucifixion went far, far away from that crucifixion, spread all over the earth, and also spread out in time. And we might say that for the first century or two after the crucifixion of Jesus, that it was still beyond the comprehension of most people. It certainly was beyond the comprehension of most of the disciples, perhaps except for John, what had really happened and what that death and resurrection meant. It was St. Paul who perhaps was able to give it its clearest embodiment in human language, but Paul did not experience the crucifixion directly. He experienced the Christ in the etheric world in a very different way. So the shockwaves meant that human beings did not really understand what had happened. And the early Christians, there's a degree of cluelessness about them, we might say. And besides, they were suffering the other aspect of the shockwaves, which was that people were turned against Christianity and feared it. And Ahriman in particular and Lucifer were doing everything possible to dull people's consciousness so that the ramifications of the crucifixion could not be comprehended. And it finally reached a point that between the 4th and 7th centuries AD, or CE, common error as we say today, between the 300s and to the end of the 600s, that human beings, as a direct result of the deed of Christ, lost all vestiges of the old clairvoyance. So that people completely, and we were speaking about Aesop's time, which is, we could say, directly the other side of the scale. There we're talking about the 7th and 6th centuries BC, and here we're talking about the 6th and 7th centuries AD, very interesting, that now that old clairvoyance that was beginning to disappear in classical times is completely gone. It only lives on, as Steiner says, as a state of illness. It's pathology now for people to be able to experience the divine world as they once did quite naturally and healthily. So that's gone. And this is truly the beginning of the Dark Ages. And the decisions made by the early church fathers, for example, regarding the existence of spirit and soul in the human being and various heresies and various church scholars who were kind of kicked out of the church or hunted down, they and their followers, all of this has to do with people living in complete darkness, in growing darkness, which becomes quite complete in the 600s. And then nobody really can see into the spiritual world anymore. In the Western world, it's different in the East. We'll talk about that a little later. So it's gone. And this is, for example, Steiner indicates why Thomas Aquinas, much later on, hundreds of years later, has to meticulously, agonizingly, in the greatest detail, prove that God exists. As Steiner says, you don't have to prove something that you know. You don't have to prove something that you experience. You know, nobody has to prove that the sun rises every morning. Yet he had to prove to good Christians, Catholics, that God existed because people weren't sure anymore. Or in fact, their experience told them, no, he doesn't. So the spiritual world, recognizing that this was perhaps the greatest crisis into which humanity had ever been thrown, had already prepared the remedy, already had a kind of homeopathic medicine ready for human beings in this time. And these were the higher members of the Jesus being. We could say the Christ being. At this point, the spiritual beings began to the only way to put it is to say they began to drop down like, you know, care packages on parachutes, as it were. They began to drop down at first replicas of the etheric body of Jesus. And these then would descend on certain people, and these people in time would start to experience great differences within their own being, and those around them would start to experience differences as well. Differences like what? Well, for example, what does the etheric body contain? As we know, as good Waldorf practitioners, in fact, we're working on this every day with our students, it contains memory. This is where our memory is lodged, in our etheric body. Now, if you are receiving the etheric body of Jesus of Nazareth, and it is gradually merging with your etheric body and to some extent supplanting it, whose memories will you be carrying? Think about that for a moment. You are going to be carrying the memories of Jesus of Nazareth, which is to say, you may feel impelled, you may feel compelled, maybe something of a compulsion, that you want to start to paint or sculpt your memories, and your memories will show you, for example, the nativity. Your memories will show you the resurrection. You will have memories of sitting at the Last Supper with your disciples, or memories of performing various miracles. It will depend to some extent on the constitution of your own physical, astral, and ego, how the memories will ripple through you and what you will see and what you will experience. But think of this. Think how many nativity scenes you have seen painted, medieval nativity scenes, and later on, let's say, late medieval, early Renaissance, in which you see the nativity taking place and there's snow all around it. And everybody's hovering in the cold and the snow. Is that what Bethlehem looked like? Snow and cold in December? I don't think so. But if you have partially the memory of Jesus being born, and partially memories of your own childhood in December, and you happen to come from northern Germany, or Sweden, or even northern Italy, you may very well meld your memories and the memories of Jesus, and you present everybody wearing European medieval clothing, and you present everybody looking very European. You know, Mary may have golden blonde hair and blue eyes, for example, though that was more a rarity, even when Europeans painted her. So think about that. That would be one aspect of this. Or you're able to speak to your fellow monks in a monastery or people in your village. You may be a peasant and you start to talk to your fellow peasants with tremendous wisdom and certainty about the life of Jesus. Where does that come from? It's as though it's as clear to you as memories of your own life. In fact, day by day, it grows more clear to you than memories of your own life. And finally, if you live long enough, and usually you didn't, but you would basically forget your own life completely and only have the memories of Jesus. So that's one aspect of taking on the etheric body of Jesus of Nazareth. What else does the etheric body carry? It carries form. It carries particularly the form of our body. It carries the intentions that we bring from the spiritual world to have a certain kind of nose, certain shape ears, to be thin or heavy or big or small or whatever. In time, and this would be a much slower process and would only be partly realized, but in time, the etheric forces of Jesus of Nazareth would start to work on transforming your body. Every 7 years, you would start to look less like your old self and more like, guess who? Jesus of Nazareth. And it may be a fellow monk in your monastery would say to you, I would like you to sit so I can paint your portrait because I think you look a lot like Jesus. And this is one of the ways in which the image, the face of Jesus of Nazareth, came to be known to people, because the etheric forces were starting to transform. Now, we're not talking about thousands of people in Europe who have this, very small numbers, you know, certainly under 100, probably under 50. But there also may be many that we don't know about who's were not documented, didn't come down to history. And thirdly, the etheric body carries our healing forces. It carries our immune system, as we say today. It's that which sustains our health, or when we get ill, that starts to heal us. So it might very well be that one of the people in a village is suffering from blindness, and another peasant goes up to them and is able to touch their eyes and they can see, or touch their paralyzed leg and they can walk, or that they have a kind of issue, a horrible bleeding sore on their arm, and it's touched by this individual and the etheric body of Jesus, which is nothing but healing forces, is able to heal that. Or someone puts his hand in a fountain, and whoever drinks of that fountain is healed of their afflictions, or at least they're greatly moderated. Here again, such an individual would have powerful healing forces. And one last point, the etheric body is the body that we share with the world of the plants. Therefore, an individual like this might be able to do something akin to the miracle of the loaves and fishes, at least on the level of the loaves. Such a person would be a good gardener. In fact, the resurrected Christ was mistaken for a gardener when he was first seen. Here would be a really good gardener, someone you'd want in your village in times of drought, someone you'd want in your monastery in times when locusts were eating up all of the food that you had planted, someone who would bring tremendous forces of life and healing into whatever plant he cultivated. So, think about that, and we will go on to the second part of our discussion, who were the saints?